This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Today, we turn our attention to how health departments in the country have been misspending some public funds. And I'm going to be joined by Russell Rensburg, director at the Rural Health Advocacy Project. A lot has been said, and we saw the recent release of the 2019-2020 audit outcomes for national and provincial departments showing some improvements. But you know what? It's been many, many times that there's continuously a grim picture being painted on persistent wastage, financial mismanagement, and just inadequacies that continue to have serious consequences on the lives of people, particularly those who need access to public health care. It's an issue very close to my heart because times you have to get family into that system, and it is not always at the best of its ability. Russell, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Hey, good morning, Dr. Mbuni. Congratulations on the awarding of your PhD.
Hey, Russell, hey, I think you are prophesying. That PhD is around the corner. I'm hoping I'm completing this year. So I'm taking that as a good omen. I'm going to remember this greeting. But definitely working on it, Russell. Thank you very much. How are you this morning?
I'm grateful. You know, I think it's probably about the only thing we can say nowadays after a very terrible 15 months.
Absolutely.
It's put the whole entire national project in jeopardy. But hopefully we'll come out of this and learn and build back stronger.
And we remain hopeful, Russell. That's the only thing we can have. But let's deal with something that has been with us for the longest time. People, particularly in rural areas, township areas, still hopeful that a lot of public health is going to improve. At times, even in urban areas, Russell, if you look at how things such as, you know, oncology services deteriorated at hospitals such as, you know, in Durban, there at Addington. So it's not just only in rural areas where we have a problem with this. But just take us through, Russell, your concerns with what continuously gets reported by the AG. Let's start there. Auditor General always painting a grim picture of the health sector, particularly.
Yeah, no, I think look, the challenges of the health sector are complex, to say the word. You know, I think obviously the main line item that worries people is things like medical legal claims.
Yes.
You know, as our current public finances work, we don't make any provisions for the payment of these claims. So every year when we set up our budgets, we are not actually accounting for paying any medical legal claims. So the net result is that a lot of these claims have been running for years, you know, and then they get settled in piecemeal approaches. So every year, provinces are probably allowed to divert about 10% of the budget towards the payment of these claims.
Mm.
And the unfortunate thing is that after doing that, there's very little room left for other contingencies, you know, because the budget is set, the program of action is set, and when we pay these claims, we're taking money from somewhere else, and that ultimately leads to the kind of things that you were alluding to earlier, in the erosion of baseline services. But addressing it is going to be complicated.
Now, Russell, I mean, let's talk about these medical legal claims because they are really serious. I'm looking at some amounts here, quite staggering amounts, 23.8 billion in Gauteng, in KZN, medical claims increasing from 20.1 billion in 2018-2019 to 23.4 billion rands in 2019-2020. These claims also point to a symptom of something that is wrong within the system. Because if things were working well, probably the scale of these claims would be quite small. What do we know as the key drivers to these medical legal claims?
Well, again, it's a combination of poor management. And I think that management happens on two levels. You know, a claim normally arises out of a poor management of an adverse event. So if something goes wrong, right, during the a medical procedure, a lot of these things are probably related to complications around pregnancy, right? And then the process starts. You know, so let's, for instance, I don't really want to make an example because it's quite a sad state of affairs.
Yeah.
But they make a mistake at a district hospital where a lot of these things happen. And there's either a problem where the mother dies or the baby is permanently disabled. In a lot of cases, it's cerebral palsy. Right? Those claims are then meant to be managed. Mm. What they call an adverse event process. And then because of sometimes poor management in hospital, that process is delayed. Right? And then eventually people go and see a lawyer. The lawyer then makes these claims for compensation to cover the treatment of the child, to award damages and so forth. And then the state has an opportunity to defend. Unfortunately, in the past, you know, a combination of just poor management at the facility level, you know, a lot of the files related to these procedures are not kept up to date.
Mm.
So by the time that the department has to defend these things, because the state is being sued, not the individual doctor.
Yes.
Right? Because the state has vicarious liability for the people that work with them. And because the state has deep pockets, the claims are quite high. Right? And I think if we just improve management at that local level, we could probably manage these claims better.
Absolutely.
Look at Western Cape, for instance. We won't say they don't have adverse events. But I think when a situation happens, they settle much earlier in the process.
Rather than litigating all the way to...
Exactly.
A court determination. And Russell, I think this is something I've been, wanting to have a conversation on. Have you, as an advocacy project, thought on ways to assist government think of a better system or regime of dealing with these claims outside of the court processes? Because it seems as if this is partly what contributes to the excessive amounts that we are dealing with where medical legal claims are concerned.
Yeah, we've been speaking to government for a while, and I think most of the provinces are implementing these strategies, right? So I think for now, because they have a backlog of claims, some provinces are in a worse position than others.
Mm.
So there are literally lawyers sitting in provincial offices all across the country going through these claims and identifying those that could be settled earlier, right, and then taken off the books. And in new claims, if there are events where the department can defend, they defend. You know, I think part of the problem is that we don't have specific legislation dealing with this.
Yeah.
So when the lawyers sue, they sue across a number of different rights, right? Because we don't have a public liability sort of a law or limitations of public liability. So they sue on the right to bodily integrity. They sue on the right to dignity. They sue. So it's quite a broad sense. And I would suggest that a lot of people read the SA Health Review or the SA Health Law Commission's report on this, where they looked at the broader legislative reform that we require.
Mm.
You know, so we actually need a determination on how to manage this. We need to maybe centralize the settlement of medical claims,
yep,
so that we can have the specialist deal with it. Right? And I think we need to get into a situation where we start also documenting or taking action against the medical officers who are found guilty of professional misconduct in some of these events. Because at the moment, we don't have any sense of who the doctors or other healthcare workers are who are involved in these processes. And who knows, there may be serial offenders, you know, and these guys continue to practice in our hospitals.
Mm.
There's no personal accountability because the state takes all accountability. I'm not wishing away the state's accountability. I'm just saying that the issue is complex.
Yeah.
But it has to do with poor management and planning. And the lack of doing this correctly is resulting in an erosion of healthcare services for everyone.
I mean, talking about poor management or a lack thereof, we also have problems with things such as unauthorized expenditure and irregular expenditure, Russell. I mean, the Eastern Cape, you know, talking about unauthorized expenditure of about 1.59 billion rands, the highest of all the provinces in the 2019-2020 financial year. And that province, Russell, has been quite notorious over the years for, you know, mismanagement of funds in the health sector. In 1 year, many, many years ago, there was even an allegation of a billion rands that had just gone, nobody knew how it grew legs and just left the accounts of the department. Again, Russell, the question is, we keep coming back to these figures and statistics. What can be done to solve these issues?
Localized. In my sense, I think it's a whole process, man. I think we start with the process of what an audit is and what an audit is meant to tell us.
Mm.
You know, so an audit is normally a reflection on looking back. You know, so based on what we planned and budgeted for, what did we do?
Yes.
Right? And in each of those categories, did we stick to the plans or did we deviate from the plans? And if we deviated from the plans, is there enough documentary evidence to suggest that we took these in good conscience and that the decisions ultimately contributed to a better outcome?
Mm.
You know, so not all of that money is necessarily fraud or theft. Now, let's take an example, for instance. Right? Now, recently, and I think I referred to it in the article, you know, there was a big furore around the 6,000 healthcare workers, temporary healthcare workers for that matter, who were employed for a temporary period and their contracts expired, right? Because the budget line that we're paying them was no longer available, right? But then politically, the political decision maker decides, you know, I don't like the optics of this. So we're now going to make a decision to extend those contracts by 12 months. But keep in mind, the budget's already been made, right? And there was no money for those posts. And I'm not saying that we don't need the posts, but there was no budget. So now that money, where's that money going to come from? You know, so you're going to divert that money from somewhere else, or you're going to overspend on your health budget. And that essentially makes it unauthorized expenditure.
Yeah.
You know, so the account, what they call the accounting officers, the HOD, but the decisions of the political office bearer has an impact on his ability to his or her ability to manage their budget lines. You know, so I think that administrative political interface, we need to really fix that. You know, MECs are not executive office.
Yes.
You know, and I think we should do more to support the budget holders to execute their budget. And I think that's a way that we can sort of get rid of irregular expenditure. I think the other area of concern is, again, also linked to the political administrative interface.
Yes.
This has got to supply chain management. You know, at the moment, if we've got obviously a revision on the procurement bill on the table at the moment. But as it stands, you know, I think at different levels of the SEM process, there is an opportunity for political influences to be able to direct tenders to politically connected people.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a problem. And then when we look at that, we're also overpaying for the things that we go on tender. And we're making a mockery of the BEE principles that are meant to undermine their tender adjudication process.
Russell, I want to come back to this question of overpaying, because health as a constitutional right, I've often argued that probably we need to think differently when we procure for people to make sure that the constitutional rights are delivered to people. But let me just go on a quick ad break. I'm going to be back. I'm talking to Russell Rensberg, director at Rural Health Advocacy Project. That line is 0861-987-000. If you just want to talk to us here on some of your thoughts and questions that you may have for my guest here on Power Talk.
You're listening to Power Talk, 9 a.m. to noon.
And of course, call us on 0861-987-000. Tweet me at Lukona Mguni, hashtag Power Talk. Russell, you talk about overpaying, and probably not just BEE being the problem. There are questions around, you know, preferential procurement and the likes, the framework, and some people at times abuse the procurement processes. And I don't think it's the legislation per se that is the problem. It is the people in the system that are a problem, rather than the legislation. I mean, the markups that we see, whether people are providing essentials or providing food, for example, to hospitals, which is quite a clear line item that is used a lot, and many people are service providers for this. What can we do to limit the cost of delivery of the goods and services that hospitals need? Because the more we increase the cost of doing business in these hospitals, the more we actually affect people's access to a constitutional right.
Absolutely, and I couldn't agree with you more. Look, let me just be clear. The problem is not BEE or BEE policies and regulations. It's abuse of the principle of those particular policies. You know, firstly, in terms of the preferential procurement lines for politically connected people, and then just that whole process. I think for me, there are two solutions. The first thing is obviously the thing that the Auditor General is beginning to look at, this material irregularity.
Mm.
Right? And I think part of that is designed to look at these contracts where they were maybe made irrationally. They stuck to the letter of the law, but they abuse the intent of the law. right? So there's no, maybe we should introduce like a, like what I think a market test.
Yeah.
You know, as part of the tender adjudication process. You know, currently we don't necessarily have to choose the cheapest provider because there are other factors at play that we want to develop. But we don't really have a market test. You know, so I can buy, technically, if I submit a tender or do a bid adjudication for the procurement of water, all I need to have is 3 competitive quotes.
Yeah.
Right? But each of those quotes could be ranged from 80 rand a bottle of water to 100 rand for a bottle of water. Right? Whereas the market price of that bottle of water is 15 rand.
Mm.
But they would have met all the tender criteria, but they would have gone over the budget. You know, so maybe the introduction of a market test can make these things more rational. And I think in the introduction of these expanded powers for the Auditor General, I think we can start seeing more of these things kind of happen. And I think it will protect what we call accounting officers.
Mm.
But I think the bigger problem is a political problem. You know, in our current situation, you know, we have an electoral system that elects a party rather than an individual, right? And as a student of political science, you will know that the leverage then lies with the party, not with the electorate, you know, because the party can both deploy you and recall you. You know, so ultimately, when you are doing oversight at any level of government, be it at local government, legislatures, or even parliament, you know, you don't fully exercise your accountability responsibilities, and you're more accountable to the whip. So you can see this playing out in influencing tender processes. You know, so if someone is not compliant, we can just recall them from the local government or whatever, and then they will make the decision the way that we want.
Yeah.
So I think in the longer term, we won't solve this problem until we really fix that political administrative interface.
Russell, I've got a tweet here from Sipo saying he's curious to know if there are cases that do fail on merit where there's litigation and civil action is taken against the state on these medical claims. And he says he knows some law firms are always on a lookout for such cases and for selfish reasons.
Okay.
Russell, do I still have you?
Yeah, I lost you there for a moment.
Okay, Russell, I was just saying, Sipo is asking, I mean, do some of these medical claims cases fail? Because he's also aware that some law firms are always on the lookout for such cases, and at times it's for selfish reasons.
There's no doubt about that. You know, I think this is something that I feel that the councils of the bar should look at, the schedules of fees. You know, most of these cases are taken on the retainer. Right. And then when a big settlement favor law firms, because then they take their money up front. And, you know, the rest of the money is then managed under trust for the beneficiary. You know, so I think lawyers do benefit. And we're seeing a repeat of what happened in the road accident fund happening with provincial departments of health. And then hence the comment for us to urgently tighten up the legislation around litigation. This is not to say that people don't have the right to sue the state. Right, I think at the end of the day, we just have to make sure that the right people benefit from those things. And at the moment, I think the lawyers, by and large, probably benefit a lot more. And this is not a reflection on the entire legal profession. I think ultimately people just take the opportunities as they see them. And we see that happening with the Road Accident Fund. And we're also seeing it happening with these medical legal claims. Hence the need to avoid litigation, to settle malpractice much sooner in the process, right? And then to ensure that people get the kind of support they need to be able to live with the impacts of that medical liability over the longer term. But I think the system needs reform. And we're going to keep talking about this until we've reformed it in a manner where it disincentivizes certain actors to push for these cases.
Russell, before I let you go, I do want to touch on something that always comes up, especially when we talk about rural healthcare. We often hear, you know, stocks on medication are low, there's not this type of medicine or not that type of medicine, there isn't enough oxygen, there isn't enough X-rays not working. How is the state of rural healthcare to your assessment today?
keep losing you.
Russell, I don't know. Something seems to be in motion. I'm just asking, how is the state of rural healthcare today, to your assessment, particularly when it comes to shortages on medicine, maybe sometimes faulty X-ray machines not working when people need those to be conducted on them?
I think it's terrible, in my opinion. You know, I think it's regressing and it's going to get worse. You know, the way that we currently fund public sector healthcare means that rural facilities are often the least priority, right? And most of the money gets sucked into large urban areas and large hospital complexes. I think we all need to start looking again at the NHI reform proposal, which presents an opportunity to change the way that we fund public sector health by bringing money closer to the point of delivery, rather than having money allocated through political processes at the provinces, which are suboptimal and inefficient.
Yep.
So as far as rural healthcare is concerned, it really just depends where you are. You know, there are some excellent rural hospitals staffed by excellent committed teams who find ways to work around some of these complications. But as a system, I think over the last 10 years, we've eroded rural health capacity. And our funding has stayed the same, but our healthcare needs have gone up.
Russell, let me just quickly squeeze in Rapulane here. Rapulane, good morning.
Morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good, my brother. Straight to it, please.
Good. Yeah, look, I'm really infuriated with Russell wanting to problematize lawyers when it comes to issues of medical negligence. and he's talking things that I'm not sure whether he really understands them. He's talking contingency and the like. That is regulated. There's an act that talks to contingency. But the problem, the reality is that lawyers would never get involved in medical negligence unless there is negligence.
Okay.
Problematizing lawyers.
I hear
that. Do away with negligence.
I hear the point you are raising. Russell, quickly before I let you go and go to news.
Look, I don't think, I think I qualified it. I said I don't have a problem with lawyers, right? Mm. I'm saying at the moment, we need to have a review of the system as to who benefits.
Absolutely.
You know, I think it's well documented that there are unscrupulous legal practitioners operating both in the road accident fund and more recently within the medical legal claim space.
Mm.
And I think at the moment, the law allows them. It's not illegal. They're not doing illegal things, and I think they are performing their duties. But we need to have a review to see whether the poison is better than the cure.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think there needs to be a reform in the management of public liability. There needs to be a reform, or at least an investigation, to see the extent to which the patients and the beneficiaries benefit from medical legal claims. And I think we need to look at this process because it's not going to go away.
Absolutely. Russell, I think this is a conversation we need to expand on more in future. We might be calling you back. Thank you for joining us this morning.
No, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Munguni. I'm going to keep calling you Dr. Munguni.
Thank you, Russell. That's the latest on Power Talk. Dr. Munguni, Russell Rensberg, joining us on all issues healthcare spending.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.